Hare Krishna. And welcome on this beautiful sunny day in March. Today I'm going to speak about... Thanks, Prabhu. Your body is only a short-term rental. Your body is only a short-term rental. It's not a long-term possession. Sure. In the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna explains the science of yoga to Arjuna, his disciple, his friend, who was on the verge of fighting an internecine war between two inter-family groups. He was at a crossroads, Arjuna, and he could not figure out why in all dharma and morality he would do this. He would fight this war. So he was in a quandary when he surrendered to Krishna, and Krishna began to explain the science of yoga. Idam shariram kauteya kshetram it yabidhiyate etad yo vetitam prahu kshetragya iti tad vidaha. And this is from the 13th chapter, and the next verse is kshetragyam chapimam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata kshetra kshetragyayor jnanam yachchad jnanam matam mama. So here in the first verse, Krishna says, this body, O son of Kunti, he's the son of his mother, Kunti, is called the field. The body is the field. It's the field of action. It's the kshetra. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. Who's obviously the knower of the field? Who's the knower of this field? Well, assuming I'm in here, it's probably me. As each one of you are the knower of your own field, your body. You're more or less aware of what's going on in there. Not in all the details, but lots of stuff. Right? In that second verse, Krishna says, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. In all bodies. And to understand this body and its knower, that is called knowledge. That's real knowledge. You mean if you get a university degree, that's not knowledge? Yeah, that's knowledge. It's knowledge as well. But that's knowledge connected to matter. Primarily. Here he's talking about that's real knowledge. Knowledge connected to spirit. Soul. Why? Why is that more important? Or why does he say, well, that's knowledge? Because it's eternal. It doesn't diminish. It doesn't diminish over time. That's why it's real knowledge. It's more important. So Krishna says, I am the knower in both. You are aware of one body in one lifetime. But in this particular lifetime, you're again aware of one body. God, by definition, is aware of everyone and everybody. Okay? And then, of course, in the Katha Upanishad, we have the old example, we've talked about it many, many times, the wonderful metaphor of the two birds in the same tree. The jiva, the living entity, or the atma, and the parama atma, the super soul. The soul, the super soul. Atma, parama atma. Right? And as the soul, we are busy enjoying the fruits. Which fruits? The fruits of the material experience that we are in. Well, let me have this, let me try that, let me taste that. And the whole time, the super soul, Vishnu, Paramatma, Krishna, is sitting there, like 10 branches away? No, no, no. He's pretty close. He's like just there. But you don't see him because you're too busy enjoying the fruits. So this metaphor is explained in a different way here. 13th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. Then Krishna says, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Bhuni me vititani janmani tavacharjuna tan yaham vedasaravani na tvam veta parantapa. The personality of Godhead said, many births, not one birth, both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them. You cannot. So what we're trying to establish here, who's in charge? Who has the upper hand? God. Krishna. God in the heart. He has the knowledge. He's the witness. He's the sakshi. He's witnessed everybody and everything in all lifetimes, in all millennia. Alright? Now, Prabhupada, in his infinite wisdom, and he, honestly, Prabhupada has infinite wisdom. Prabhupada is our founder, Acharya, Bhaktivedanta Swami. So Prabhupada says, supposing, gives this great analogy, supposing you rent, you either rent an apartment or you rent a house. You don't own it, but you rent. Many people rent. No? Now, you have a rental agreement with the whom? What do we call that guy?
Landlord.
The landlord. He's a kind of lord too, you see? He's a lord too. So we have an agreement. Now, you can do certain things in your house or apartment, right? You can decorate. You can bring in your furniture. You might be able to turn your music up. I don't know. Depends. You can do many things in your apartment. Cook your meals. Offer your food to Krishna. Many nice things you can do. But can you do anything and everything? No. Why? Because it's not your house. And you're required to pay rent. Maybe you have a lease, a rental lease. Maybe you're in for 6 months. Maybe you're in for a year. Or 5 years. But you're not in charge. Not ultimately. Your autonomy and your independence and your self-determination in that apartment or that house is limited. Right? So, the owner of the house, the owner of the body, is God. You have the lease, you got the short-term lease. It's good for X amount of years. Hopefully you'll keep it in good repair, good upkeep. Maybe he'll paint it for you once in a while. Some landlords do, some don't, right? So, it's on loan, essentially. We're trying to establish that everything we do here, everything we have, everything we can accumulate, anything we can draw to us and place around us, is all temporary. It's all temporary. Now, you're entitled to a certain amount of enjoyment as a human in this world. You're also entitled to, or encouraged to, grow and evolve. If you don't grow and evolve as persons, as personalities, as spiritual beings, then why are we here? and we're just marking time, treading water, not going anywhere. We can go, we can progress, we can plateau, we can regress. Get stuck. Can we regress? Can we go backward? Yeah. Some people do. It's not recommended. Some people do. It happens. Plateauing, is that a good thing? How's it going? Yeah, you know, same old. Of course, we go through all these phases, don't we? We're humans. We can't be progressing all the time. It's too much work. Chill, you know, make some progress. Relax, assimilate, process it, move forward again. It's natural. In the Isha Upanishad, the Upanishads are some books that are known to be the essence of Vedanta. Vedanta is Eastern philosophical understanding and all the systems, plural, that make up Vedanta. Upanishads figure prominently, as does Bhagavad Gita, which is part of Mahabharata. So, in the Isha Upanishad, in the first mantra, Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kincha jagachang jagat tena tyaktena bunjita magradaha kasya sviddhanam. What does that mean? Everything animate or inanimate that it is within the universe is controlled and owned by God. Controlled and owned by God. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota. And one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. Does that mean you can't try to better yourself in life or progress in life? And maybe, for example, increase your income over time, be able to provide for your family with greater comfort and facility? No, doesn't mean you can't do that. When it says, set aside as the quota and not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong, for most of you, that's probably not really an issue or a problem. It's when you have $5 billion and you're real excited about it and you're excited on to expand that. What do you do with $5 billion? Well, I buy and sell companies. I buy and sell this. I do this. I do that. But really, what do you do with $5 billion? Or however many you have? When we know there are millions of destitute people, starving people in the world, that even a small amount of that money would reduce their suffering. That is an example of having more than your quota. Maybe you need 3 houses on 3 different continents. Okay. Maybe you do. Maybe you're an international business person and you need certain things. Maybe you need an airplane. I don't know. But you only need so much to function. After that is covered, from there on in, it's self-indulgent. Alright? And we get swept up in the frenzy of lobha. What's lobha? Greed. Greed. Alright. So what this verse tells us is we are taking that which does not belong to us. You can better yourself, but you also are to operate within your realm. Some people are very blessed. They're very fortunate. They have wonderful karma. And, well, it just explodes for them. Now, if it doesn't change them as people, and they're experiencing, you know, the thing, it unfolds in a natural way, and etc., and they're peaceful, and they're developing themselves simultaneously spiritually, it's not a problem. But I know a lot of really, really wealthy people. And most of them are really miserable. Or they're not peaceful. Because it takes a lot of effort to make a lot of money, for example. It takes even greater effort to protect the money, to maintain it once you have it. People say, well, once I'm going to have it made, I'm going to make all this money. Well, I have it made. You're probably, yeah. You've got a few things covered. Now your problems have really begun. Because money will dissipate of its own accord. Why? Does money dissipate? You don't even have to do much with it. It dissipates. It's the law of nature. Because money is... Who's the embodiment of money and wealth? Lakshmi. Goddess of fortune. Is she not? What is the name they use for Lakshmi? Chanchala. What does that mean? Chanchala Devi. Oh, she's very fickle. Very, very fickle. Bored easily. She may come. She may bless you. She may not stay as long as you want. Lakshmi can only be permanently, how shall I say, captivated. By whom? By Vishnu, by God. Right. So, if you get confused by chasing after wealth and you lose peace and you lose peace of mind and you're driven by greed or you have that fever, then no. Now, I want to... change course a little bit here. In doing some research for this talk, I kind of went off on a bit of a tangent here, but it's really, I think this is quite interesting. I want to go through a bit of a tour through history, quick tour, in the last 5,000 years. Well, it should be easy enough to do. From the point of Dharma and from the point of Vedanta. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, because Arjuna is in such a quandary, he doesn't want to fight. He's a warrior, he's a prince, his kingdom has been usurped unlawfully by his cousins, he and his four brothers, the Pandavas, and now they are on the verge of the battle on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the field of the Kurus. Yeah. And this is a bit of a purport that Prabhupada says. The Vedic injunction is Ma Hingsyat Sarvabhutani. Never commit violence to any living being. Sarva Bhutani. Bhuta means beings. Does it mean humans only? No. Beings. All kinds of beings. Sarva, all. Ma means do not. Never. Hingsyat. And the root is hingsa. Violence. Never commit violence to any living being. Nor does understanding that the living entity is not killed, because the soul lives on even when a person is killed or a being is killed. The soul lives on. The soul is eternal. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. You can only kill the body. Nor does that encourage animal slaughter. Killing the body of anyone without authority is abominable and punishable by the law of the state as well as by the law of God. Arjuna, however, is being engaged in killing on the principle of religion, on the principle of Dharma, because he is a warrior and he's to protect the people and look after them. Warriors have to sometimes kill or fight or go into battle to protect the people or to get back the unjustly stolen kingdom. Okay? So Krishna's trying to explain this to Arjuna. So let's do this little journey here. Now, 5,000 years ago, Krishna was on the planet, then he left. When Krishna left, what era, what epoch began almost immediately? Kali Yuga. Okay? So, Kali Yuga, the Iron Age of the four ages or seasons of the universe. Kali Yuga is the age of degradation, deprivation, diminution, anger, quarrel, hypocrisy, criticism, cruelty. Everything begins to fall apart in Kali Yuga, and consciousness begins to sink. Morality goes out the window. Wars increase. Demons, dark forces, criminals, criminal forces, entities, groups, governments are on the increase. The darkness has its time to increase and the light begins to diminish. That's the definition of Kali Yuga. It's 432,000 years in duration. We've passed 5,000 years only. So we're only getting going. Okay. Now, when Krishna left the planet and Kali Yuga began, let's point out this. In the Vedas, for many, many millennia, there are provisions made for animal sacrifice. That animals like a goat or a sheep or something like this can be offered with mantra, consecrated with mantra, slain, made an offering particularly to Kali Devi, to Kali, which is a manifestation of the goddess, but of more the material side, or the darker side of the goddess. She will accept offerings of flesh and wine. Okay? There are provisions for that. If you look at the Old Testament of the Bible, are those provisions not there as well? They are. And they did various sacrifices, right? So this is an old tradition. Right? But what happened was, immediately because of the influence of Kali, people began to get a taste for eating flesh. So they were having sacrifices every day. Okay, boom, here we go. Let's do another one. Let's have another one. And they got carried away with themselves. Okay? So this went on for roughly 2,500 years, and it got worse and worse and worse over time. And at the same time, they became less God-realized. They became godless. And spiritual principles were very much on the wane. Okay? So, what does Krishna say? Yada idahi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhitanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyam. When spiritual principles or religious principles begin to diminish, at that time I descend myself, or I send a representative in order to protect the devotees, the suras, the believers, the theists, the good souls, and to diminish the influence of the negative, the asuras, the negative dark forces or personalities. Okay? The Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana, was written just before the end of Dwapara Yuga, just before Kali Yuga began. It was written by Vyasadeva. So here's the quote. This prediction comes 2,500 years before this took place. What happened? Tatakalausam Puravrate Samohaya Suradusham Budo Namnanjanasuta Kikateshu Bhavishyati. What does that mean? Then, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, in the beginning, after 2,500 years, we're still in the beginning. In the beginning of Kali Yuga, the Lord Vishnu comes as, what do we call that when he comes down? Avatar. Vishnu comes down as Avatar. He will appear as Lord Buddha. You know Lord Buddha?
The Buddha.
Right. It's the Tibetan version. The son of Anjana. That's his mother's name. His mother's mentioned. Come on. Better give her some credit. In the province of Gaya. Where's Gaya? Bihar. No? North. Northeast? A little bit? North central. Tell me. What are these? Okay. Well, then we've been looking at the same map. Just for the purpose of deluding those who are envious of the faithful believers. Wow. For the purpose of deluding those who are envious of the devotees, the believers. Now I'm going to read some of this purport. This, of course, written by Prabhupada. This is from the first canto, third chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Buddha, a powerful incarnation of the personality of God, had appeared in the province of Gaya, Bihar, as the son of Anjana. He preached his own conception of nonviolence. What is the essence of Buddhist philosophy from 2,600 years ago? Ahimsa. Correct? Hinsa is violence. Ahimsa means nonviolence. Many of us, many people, are followers of Buddhist principles and practices today. It became very, very popular. It spread all the way through Asia, as we know. It has spread through North America. This I know. For years, I know I have all kinds of clients that have white skin and practice Buddhism, for example, in North America. So, very popular. And is it still popular today? Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, his was the culture of ahimsa, nonviolence. He deprecated the animal sacrifices sanctioned in the Vedas. So how did they go about this? The people were becoming atheistic, and they were justifying all of this animal slaughter, which was on the side of cruelty, by saying, yes, but it's in the Vedas. So Buddha said, he took the Vedas and threw them out the window. Come on, don't listen to that. That's not right. He could have said, well, no, what you need to do is just follow it like this. You're not doing it right. No, he didn't do that. He tossed it out wholesale. That's what he did. That seems extreme. Yeah. Because the behaviors at the time were very extreme and very destructive. They were destructive for the animals, but they were also destructive for the anima. The souls and the bodies of the perpetrators. Right? At that time, when Buddha appeared, the people in general were atheistic and preferred animal flesh to anything else. This is Prabhupada. On the plea of Vedic sacrifice, every place was practically turned into a slaughterhouse. And animal killing was indulged in unrestrictedly. Buddha preached nonviolence, taking pity on the poor animals. He preached that he did not believe in the tenets of the Vedas and stressed the adverse psychological effects. The adverse psychological effects in killing innocent animals. Well, I didn't know there was any adverse psychological effects killing animals. Apparently there is. Less intelligent men in the age of Kali who had no faith in God followed his principle. Right? For the time being, they were trained in moral discipline and nonviolence, which are preliminary steps for proceeding further on the path of God realization. He deluded the atheists because such atheists who followed his principles did not believe in God. So he used that. What's the highest goal in Buddhism? What's the goal? Where are we going? If you practice Buddhism, where are you supposed to end up?
Nirvana.
Nirvana. What does that mean? The void. Van means forest. Sanskrit. By the laws of Sanskrit vridhi, expansion, vana becomes vana. Vana means creation. Nirvana means no creation. Cessation of creation. Cessation of existence. The nothing, the void. That's what it means. So where's God in that? There's no God. So it was, they had already spun themselves down into a state of atheistic behavior. So he actually took advantage of that, threw the Vedas out the window, and it was essentially an atheistic philosophy. But it's a moral philosophy. Not amoral. It's moral. Now, you got to try to wrap your mind around this time frame I'm giving you here. And what it takes to bring about wholesale philosophical and behavioral changes in the world. He didn't show up for 2,500 years after Kali began, when this had degenerated to such a fever pitch. What'd you do for the last 2,500 years? Let me check my schedule. Let's see. You don't know. It's just, how can you even conceive of such a thing, right? Okay, so he deluded the atheists, but he kept their faith in Buddha, who himself was an incarnation of God. How did it work? How could he have done it? He's an avatar. But you see here, because I'm going to give you the next parts, even God knows you don't just run in full speed and turn everything topsy-turvy. Boom, we got a big change. It doesn't work like that, my friends. Even God knows the old dictum. Patience, patience, patience. It takes time. Okay. To such bewildered persons of atheistic propensity, Lord Buddha is the emblem of theism. He therefore, first of all, wanted to check the habit of animal killing. The animal killers are dangerous elements on the path of going back to Godhead. There are two types of animal killers. The soul is sometimes called the anima. Why is it called the anima? Because it animates. If your soul at this moment left your body, what would happen? Tell me. You'd be lying there, or me. All the organs would be there. All the parts would be there. Still have your nice shirt and pants on, or whatever. But the soul would have gone. The anima, the animator. Therefore, both the slaughtering of animals and those who have lost their identity as souls are also effectively animal killers. If you kill off the soul, well, you can't kill the soul. Soul is eternal. Second chapter, Bhagavad Gita. You're killing the soul if you're doing things that cause you to disconnect with your own truth, your essence, your dharma, your reality, your moral standing, your duty towards self, toward the world around you. You are killing off the soul in that sense. Okay? Prabhupada says, it is nonsensical to say that animal killing has nothing to do with spiritual realization. One thing, if you study or practice yoga, meditation, and bhakti yoga as we practice here, and develop spiritual philosophy, particularly from the Eastern point of view, such as you find with Buddhism and the yoga system, you will very quickly realize that animal killing or meat eating reduces one's ability to understand subtle spiritual principles. Okay. So, that's Buddha's appearance. Then, 1,200 years ago, another kind of, not direct avatar of Vishnu, but another kind of empowered being came on the scene. And his name was Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya is an incarnation of whom? Do you know? Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, the yogi, the mystic, who's in charge, he's one of the guna avatars, he's in charge of dissolution, wrapping things up, bringing things to an end. But let's be clear, Lord Shiva is a very, very, very high being. According to the Vedas, he's 75% Vishnu Tattva. He is predominantly God energy. Predominantly. So Shiva then came some 1,200 years ago as Shankaracharya. Did he appear in the south? Or was it the north? In the south, right? Where?
In Kerala.
In Kerala. Wow. I was in Kerala one time, and a Kerala man said to me, "Yes, in Kerala, we are house angels, street devils." What he told me. Don't know about that. But, so, Shankaracharya came. So what happened? Shankaracharya is very, very powerful. He reestablished the authority of the Vedas. That's what he did. He reinstituted the Vedas after Buddha had tossed them out the door of the cave. But if the Buddhist philosophy is atheistic in essence, Shankar's philosophy in essence was God is energy.
Brahman,
Brahman, impersonal. I am God, you're God, we're all parts of God, therefore we all merge into the oneness of God. This is impersonalism, or also known as Mayavad philosophy. Okay. Now we have progress. You see the progress, you see the evolution that's happening with Shankaracharya's appearance. In India today, and around the world, are there mutts, meaning societies and groups of those who practice the philosophy of Shankaracharya and impersonalism? Yes, they're everywhere. They are yet still very popular because Shankar was also an empowered manifestation. Okay, so that was 1200 years ago. Fast forward to the present. Kali Yuga, still going along. And what happened? 500 years ago. Look at the altar. All right. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangopangastra Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayar Yajantihi Su Sumedasaha. Those who are intelligent will worship the golden avatar who's singing the names of God. And Chaitanya shows up and introduces. He also reestablishes the authority, the validity of the Vedas, but now takes it to the personal manifestation of God, entering into a loving reciprocation with God as the person. That's why we are sitting here. And that came 500 years ago. So there's your unfoldment of Dharma and Vedanta over the last 5,000 years. In a nutshell. Okay. Now, I think we established maybe a couple more verses along those lines. Bhagavad Gita 9:7. Sarva Bhutani Kaunteya Prakritim Yanti Mamakam Kalpakshaya Punastani Kalpadao Visrijamyaham. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations again enter into my nature. This is Krishna talking. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. Then he says, Maya Jakshena Prakriti, this material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again and again. Okay. So here's Prabhupada's purport. The creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material cosmic manifestation, that's our life here, are completely dependent upon the supreme will of the personality of Godhead. At the end of the millennium means the death of Lord Brahma. Brahma is the creator. Brahma lives for 100 years. Brahma years. And his one day is calculated. His one day is 4,300,000,000 earth years. 4,300,000,000 earth years. One day. His night is of the same duration. His month consists of 30 such days and nights, and his year, 12 months. After 100 such years, when Brahma dies, the devastation or annihilation takes place. So try to imagine that if you can. I can't. But you might be better at math than me. Some of you engineering students. So, we're establishing the supremacy of God. Now, here we are, 5,000 years down in the development of Kali Yuga, and now one of the popular issues of the day is abortion. Well, based on what we said, how does that factor into it all? Well, if you listen to women, you will hear from many sources, "It's my body. It's my decision. You can't tell me what to do. I'll do whatever I want to do. It's my body." Yes and no. We established that at the beginning. There are two knowers of the field, not one. There's the soul and the super soul. To say that it is my body and if I'm pregnant, I'll do what I want to do with the baby, I'll keep it, I'll give it for adoption, or I will destroy it. It's my choice. But what about the morality in it? What about the karma in it? Well, there are many that believe, well, there's no problem. The baby's not born. The baby's not alive. Well, it's a fact that nothing can grow without the presence of spirit. As soon as the semen and the egg join within the womb and a woman becomes officially pregnant, and I know many, many women, they know instantly. I know thousands of women. They know instantly when they're pregnant, when that quickening takes place. Right? So, it's not just her and her body and her decision. The child's alive. Nothing grows without spirit. So, what about the baby? Does the baby get a vote? The fetus in the womb? Does the fetus get a vote? In America, I lived there for 30 years. When Bill Clinton was president, he signed into law late-term abortion. Late-term abortion. And it's law in the U.S. You know what a late-term abortion is? That's anytime after the seventh month. Between the seventh month and the due date, you can give me one of those. It's my body. Okay? Set it up. You go into surgery. They give the mother a drug to induce dilation. The head comes out. Do they bring the head all the way up? No. Nope. Just the crown. Then they take the saw. They saw off the top. And then they vacuum out the brain. And then they bring the rest up. That is law in the U.S. Bill Clinton. Nobody asked the baby. What is the point in what I'm telling you? Where is the compassion? Where is the morality? Yes, we know there are many situations, sometimes health situations. Sometimes people get impregnated through rape. by a stranger. These are not good situations. But we still are not considering the soul in the baby's body. So that's what needs to be considered. We do many things in this day and age that are immediate for immediate gratification without truly thinking of consequences. I'm not saying that I haven't been guilty of doing such things, not so much abortion, but doing different things for which I have been guilty and not responsible. I have. But we need to learn to grow, to evolve. So, the abortion thing is going to come up again very soon here in this country. There are two kinds of action. There is shreyas and there is prayas. You know these words? Shreyas and prayas. Prayas is immediate benefit. This is what I want to do right now. This is what pleases me. This is for my immediate benefit. That's prayas. Shreyas is ultimate benefit. Right? Shreyas is long term. What will be the best choice? I have a choice of two actions. Immediately, this is the best choice for me personally. But is it the best choice in the situation? Ultimately, what's the karma involved? What is the reaction? Is it going to cause you to come back and take another birth? Right? So we want to do things that are in harmony with Dharma, with morality. It's very difficult in this day and age because of so many things, so many challenges and situations that we find ourselves in. In fact, the whole society, pretty much anywhere you go, is not really wired for spiritual growth or spiritual interest. So that's what we're trying to promote, a higher understanding, higher consciousness and awareness for all of our actions. If you want to remove negative karma, things that perhaps have already been done by you in your life, what to speak of everything from this point forward, then there's a very simple way to do it according to Bhagavad Gita. We offer everything to Krishna, everything to God, whatever you do. We still have another 427,000 years to go. In Chaitanya's appearance on the planet 500 years ago, we've entered into kind of a minor period of a golden age where there's a rise in consciousness, conscious awareness, spirituality, and in some circles, morality, truth. And that is supposed to continue now for the next 10,000 years. We have a challenge here because the energies are flowing this way, my friends. They are flowing down. They are spiraling down. And to maintain a higher consciousness or a higher morality, to maintain spiritual practice, etc., is much, much harder. That's why we've been given the simple method of chanting the names of God in this day and age, which anybody can do, to try to maintain a higher consciousness. We can see in the world, if we look at Syria, for example, Syria, this is one place, how many, many people are suffering, how many wars are going on. To tie it all together, slaughterhouses, industrial slaughterhouses,
where animals are killed on an industrial scale has increased and increased and increased over time. Abortion has increased over time. If you go to family planning clinics in America and you're pregnant, they say they have all these things. Here are all the choices. Here's the literature. When should I schedule your abortion? That's what they do in America. They call it family planning. They don't really push anything else. They just push abortion. So the more we engage in animal slaughter without compassion, the more we promote abortion as, you know, legislate it, make it legal, the more things will diminish over time. Look at your weather. Look at the weather. Natural disasters and imbalances in nature and pestilence and crop failure and weather patterns. These are examples of you reap what you sow. What we've created, we're getting the results. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention. Questions? Comments? Phil?
What you were saying with the data of abortion, was it open online and showing the database server asked them what their reason for having the data of abortion was? And one of the ones that was up at the top of the percentage was women who didn't actually know that they were pregnant.
There are women that get pregnant and have no idea they're pregnant. I know it seems kind of hard to believe, but I think it's more and more common. Yeah, exactly. They're out of touch with their field, you know. I had a woman I knew years ago. She just rolled her eyes if she hear that some woman got pregnant. She go, oh, come on. When a woman ovulates, she ovulates for, I think it comes anywhere from 10, 11, 12 days after the period. Then she ovulates for 2 days, three maximum. And there's different physiological changes that take place in the body, like there's more heat and, you know, different things. I don't know. I'm not in a woman's body. But according to this friend of mine, she said, come on. How do you not know when you're ovulating? You must know when you're ovulating if you're in touch with your kshetra, your field. It says, you are the knower of the field. Well, I didn't know. 7 months pregnant? I didn't know. Where were you? I was busy. We have to become aware. Anything else about that, Phil?
As long as you're not aware of that, you're in a good position to make a life of that decision.
Well, this is it, you know. Let's just say somebody who gets pregnant unexpectedly or an unplanned pregnancy, and she's a woman, and she's, let's just say, somewhat hormonal at that moment, which she should be if she's pregnant, may not be thinking as clearly and may be desperate, which is understandable. But the point here is it's not just your decision. It's not that simple.
Well, it's the peers as well. It's not just the person who's pregnant. It could be their mother and father who is actually saying to them, look, you don't want this.
Yeah. You're right. Sorry? Oh. What was her name? The, something that...
No, you're the person you know. She's like 12 or 13 or something.
Abortions? Yeah. She had, a woman came to see me in L.A. years ago. And I'm looking at her birth chart. I'm going, do you have an abortion? Yeah. That's not uncommon. You know, you see that all the time. Especially in America. Well, did you have more than one? Yeah. Like two? No. How many did you have? 13. You had 13 abortions? Mm-hmm. Oh. Did you use any birth control? No. Not usually. We're on a kill. Yep. You want me to talk about him? Well, I don't know much about Guru Nanak. He's, he's the Sikh Acharya. He's the guru for the Sikhs. And Sikhs are essentially a warrior race, Chachiya race, based in Punjab, northern India. Punjab is arguably the most fertile farming area in all of India, I believe. And the capital is Amritsar, where they've built the Golden Temple. Punjabi people are very, very religious, dharmic, moral people. I know lots of Punjabi people, lots of them. And Guru Nanak is their guru. I don't know all the ins and outs of their faith, but I've known Punjabis for 40, 50 years. All right. Anyone else?
We started with a conversation where you spoke about that God, we are just 5,000 years into Kali Yuga. If God is there, what is he waiting for? Why such a long wait? Why that period of another thousands of years before coming onto the earth and fixing all that is wrong out here? If it's my house, I'll go and fix it immediately. It's his house.
Yes, my friend, but it's not that simple. His house is not this house. His house is the spiritual world. This is the prison system. God creates a prison system because he gives you free will, self-determination. If you don't want to live in the spiritual world where God is in charge and God is the center of all activity in the spiritual world, if you don't want to live here, you say, hey, wait, I don't want you to be the big cheese, the most important guy. I don't buy it. I want to be the important guy. I want everything to orbit around me. No problem. I have a place for you. Down there. Welcome to the prison of the material world with the rest of us. You came. Maybe you don't remember. And I, even today, after so many years of having spiritual consciousness, I still get frustrated because of all the nonsense that goes on in the material world. But this is where it goes on. If you go back to the spiritual world, you're home. Back to home, back to Godhead. That's Prabhupada's whole motto since he came to New York in 1965. Back to home, back to Godhead, the spiritual world. None of that stuff happens. In the spiritual world, God does exactly what you say. Takes care of things right away. Here, he lets you do your thing. He leaves you to your own devices. How are we doing? We don't think clearly because we don't think with our hearts and souls. We think with our egos. Ego means the soul is covered over with this dense, thick crust, which deprives one of vision and truth. How do you like it so far? Sounds like you don't like it. I recommend you take the first train out of here, my friend. The back to Godhead train. And don't come back. Because if indeed there are 427,000 years of Kali Yuga still coming, it ain't going to get no better. I'll tell you one thing. I don't want to come back. I just pray all the time, don't make me come back down there, Krishna. Tell me I've done enough. And he says, you'll have to wait and see. Yes, I know.
What does it deprive the soul of? If it's covered in dust, it deprives the soul of?
Of? What did I say? Vision?
Truth.
Understanding truth. You can't think. You can't see clearly. Why do you what's the fifth commandment in the Old Testament of the Bible?
Thou shalt not kill.
Ma hingsyat sarvabhutani Vedas. Do you actually need to be told, thou shalt not kill? Most of you will go, of course not. You know. How do you? You know. From the other knower of the field, you know in your heart of hearts, you don't kill. You just don't. You'll do anything to avoid. You know, sometimes people make you angry when you're driving on the highway. Person cut me off, right? You know what? You're going to go kill him? No. I don't want to kill him. Well, I figuratively want to kill him, but I don't really want to kill him. Right? No.
So the material world would make people more to those commandments, but in the spiritual world, you're set free.
Well, in the spiritual world, you don't have to tell people these things. That's the point. Why do you have to tell people, you know, not to covet thy neighbor's goods? Tada kamas tada rajastamo bhava kama lobas kama lobadayashchaye. In the material world, we have rajas that leads to lust, desire. And we have tamas, the mode of ignorance, that leads to lobha, greed. Why has he got that car? He shouldn't have that car. I should have that car. Keep what is yours and leave everything what belongs to God. Everybody gets what they need. Okay? Anything else? Are we good?
Just to answer your question, is there an opportunity for me to be here and to be Krishna conscious and to return that to God? That's totally up to you or to all of us. That's the bottom line.
You'll not get the perfection or the level of idealism that you want, which is natural to you. You will not have that here. It doesn't matter how hard you try to make it perfect. It won't happen. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the material world, every endeavor is covered by some fault, some flaw. Just like a mirror is covered by dust, or a fire is covered by smoke. There is no perfection here. We strive and try to make it as best as we can, but it isn't here. God doesn't like it here. He doesn't like it here. Why do you see the president or the prime minister of the country going to the prison? He doesn't want to go to the prisons. No one wants to go to the prisons, not even for a visit. Believe me. You're in the prison. It's not so nice.
Why would I like to ask for peace of just one my soul and be there in a spiritual world? I would like to come back on the earth and take or probably leave the suffering of another 10 people if I can.
Well, then wonderful. Then you stay here and you do that, and you can keep coming back lifetime after lifetime, and you are the most compassionate of souls. And that will be your dharma. Perfect. It's even better. But just be clear on where you are. That's all. You know.
Be clear that you may not be as fortunate the next time.
You may not be as fortunate the next time.
This is a good opportunity. They're not always going to be the same opportunity.
I'm not very compassionate. No. I just want to, you know, get while the getting's good. That's me. Yes, while I'm here, I do try to help people. I have done that for many years. But I'm not exactly selfless. Selfless. Prabhupada was completely selfless. Completely selfless. I know. I saw it with my own eyes. So, you know, I can aspire to be like Prabhupada, but yeah, I'll do my best, and that's it.
What makes you keep coming back like him when you're what?
When you're generating karma. Good karma, bad karma, that brings you back. If you have one desire, yang yang vapi sparan bhavan, tyajit yante kalevaram. One desire at the time of death. One material desire. Connected to what? Matter. The body. One. Oh, jeez, I just wish I could have done that. Oh, no problem. Give him a body. Get this guy a body. Well, what kind of body? Here, here's the list of his stuff. Oh, yeah, okay. I don't think he's going to want. This is the body of a pigeon. Well, he said he wanted a lot of sex. Pigeons have sex all day. Perfect. Have you seen him? Don't think you're just, I'm here, hey, you know, I'm a human. Right now you are. Can you go backwards on the evolutionary scale to lower life forms? Oh, yes. Do I recommend it? I don't recommend it. Okay, in the human form of life, the most valuable manifestation in the material world is the human body. You got one. Brain comes with a few things. Now what? You get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. That is your opportunity. Golden opportunity with the golden avatar. That's for.
No, it's just that there's a movie on tonight, right? And I was watching it on television before, Slumdog Millionaire. And I was thinking to myself while you were saying that, and I was thinking, my God, what fortunate position I'm in that I'm not, like, in that part of the world, at that particular circumstance,
yeah.
Because that would be a horrible way to start the journey, because your choices are very limited to start with.
Well, some people will give thanks that they're not a slum dog, and some people will give thanks that they're not a millionaire. I know many millionaires. I can't think of one that I want to be like. No offense. It's not bad to be a millionaire, as long as you can remain thinking clearly. It's nothing wrong with being a millionaire. It's what it does to you, if it does. Okay, we've overstayed our welcome here on the Asan. Thank you for your kind attention. That was a rousing question and answer and comment period, I felt. Take some of the damper off my subject matter. Thank you. And now we're going to have some kirtan. And after that, we will enjoy a vegetarian feast that has been offered to Krishna. It is prasadam. Prasad means just by eating food offered to God, you become purified. Your negative karmic reaction is cleansed. Chaitanya said, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, cleansing the mirror of the mind from all the old negative karmic reactions, all the negative thoughts, all the material conditioning. By chanting, by offering everything you do, by eating Krishna Prasad. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.